This is the Bridge of the Faithful podcast, featuring your host, Jenna Erlandson.
Hey guys, and welcome to episode 22 of the Bridge of the Faithful podcast. I'm Jenna, and we are all on this faithful bridge together. These episodes are just my documentation of the things that God is showing me as I search to know what faithfulness really means. You can find this and all other episodes at botfpodcast.com. You can also connect with me at facebook.com/botfpodcast. I'm going to preface this episode with two things. One, I am by no means a relationship expert. I realize all relationships are unique, and if they need outside help, which is always an honorable thing to do, never be ashamed to get help when you need it. It needs to be a personal and individualized session. This episode is not to fix your relationships, but to change your perspective of relationships. Two, I realize that there are relationships that are unhealthy, even abusive. This episode is not about those situations, and I will not advocate for putting yourself in a dangerous situation. This episode is talking about normal relationships, and by that I mean the unpredictable, blood or choice, often dramatic, but totally worth the time and effort sort of relationships. Like any good discussion, we should all be on the same page for our definition of the topic. Oxford has many definitions, but the one closest to what I'm talking about is this: the way two or more people or groups regard and behave toward others. There are many types of relationships. Obviously, the romantic ones. Also, family, both close, parent, child, sibling, grandparent, and extended. Aunts, uncles, cousins, third cousin twice removed, etc. There are close friends, acquaintances, work partners, next door neighbors, that waiter you love to get at your favorite restaurant, that person you see every time you go to church but you just can't remember their name. These are all relationships. They're all important. And they're not all easy. Genesis 2:18 says, "Then the Lord God said, 'It is not good for the man to be alone. I will make a helper who is just right for him.'" God made us with the intent to be relational. Yes, here God is talking about making Eve for Adam, but the point is that in all of his creating, this was the first time he said, "It is not good." We are not meant to live life alone, tucked away, isolated. We are such an independent people, but the one thing we just can't fix all by ourselves is loneliness. Ecclesiastes is a wisdom literature book from the Old Testament. In it, the author thinks through many situations, giving advice on the best paths to choose. Ecclesiastes 4:7 through 12 gives fantastic reasoning to have relationships. "I observed yet another example of something meaningless under the sun. This is the case of a man who is all alone, without a child or a brother, yet works hard to give as much wealth as he can. But then he asks himself, 'Who am I working for? Why am I giving up so much pleasure now?' It is all so meaningless and depressing. Two people are better off than one, for they can help each other succeed. If one person falls, the other can reach out and help. But someone who falls alone is in real trouble. Likewise, two people lying close together can help keep each other warm. But how can one be warm alone? A person standing alone can be attacked and defeated, but two can stand back to back and conquer. Three are even better, for a triple braided cord is not easily broken." We live in a world of connectedness. With texting, social media, the news, the world doesn't seem quite so big and distant anymore. On Facebook right now, I personally have a whopping 1,220 friends. This group of people range from people I met at Honors Band in high school, so maybe 4 days total of ever being in their presence, to good friends from college, to work people, to family. I have easy access to communicating with that many people. And that's just Facebook. And now I realize I'm an extrovert to the extreme, and therefore I may have more than a lot of people. But this proves that if you're looking to have the ability to connect with people, you don't have to try very hard to find them. However, despite having millions of people available literally at our fingertips, loneliness is rampant. So much so that the UK's public health has called it an epidemic and is now considered a hazard to human health. It increases risk for inflammation, cancer, and diabetes, and actually prolonged loneliness is known to cause the release of stress hormones, One study states it's as harmful as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. We are so designed for relationships that our bodies are affected when we don't have them. No wonder Satan works so hard to keep us isolated. Lisa Turkers just put out an apropos post on Facebook, and this is what she said. Alone. That's how Satan wants us. Alone with our own tangled thoughts. Alone with his whispered lies that start to sound more and more and more like truths. Separated from the very people who could speak courage into our deep places, flirting with discouragement and defeat. Separated from friends who could let us stand on their faith when our own gets a little shaky. The enemy knows if he can isolate us, he can intimidate us, confuse us, deceive us, and ultimately make us believe that the safer paths in life are ones apart from God and our friends who serve God. I am absolutely the queen of getting myself into this situation. I forget to reach out, or even worse, attempt to do all the things on my own, and I'm left to listen to all of those thoughts, those worries, emotions on my own without anyone to help me put them in check. And the longer we do this, the more comfortable we get in that stuck zone, not realizing how much of our thoughts are the lies meant to put us deeper into loneliness. Those lies can start to turn outward, affecting the way you see others and your relationships. And if you're not careful, you may trick yourself into believing you like it better this way. I'm going to stop here and say something I wasn't actually planning on saying. Today, as I record this, was the day that my friend Derek was buried. He grew up with me. We were kids together. We did a lot of the same things. We did band, we did theater, and even through college, we did some of the same stuff. So there's a lot of history there. He was very talented and very deeply affected by people. He was empathetic and kind. And for some reason, this loneliness got deep into his soul. And I don't even understand it. I'll never understand this, but the way that Satan lies to us through this got to him. And over the weekend of Thanksgiving, one of the loneliest weekends in the year, he decided that the world would be better off without him. And that is the lie of Satan to make us alone. And that is why I am so passionate about this topic today. So let's go back to social media for a minute. I'll be the first to raise my hand and admit that I spend a lot of time on my social media accounts. I obviously like being connected to people, i.e. the 1,220 people on my Facebook, and I think it actually might be more after today. I'm a little embarrassed to admit it, but most of my time is focused on seeing how people are responding to me, not necessarily looking at other people. I'm pretty sure I'm addicted to checking how many likes I get on a post. And when I do look at what other people are saying and doing, a lot of the time I end up comparing myself. This leaves me with either an inflated ego that I don't deserve, or feeling like an utter failure in an aspect of my life, which at this point in time is usually parenting. We live in a world of constant communication, so I feel that we've lost the art of making, keeping, and deepening relationships. Actually, I would even argue that due to the mass amounts of people that we have access to, makes us more flippant with them as well. Relationships have become a dime a dozen, and they've basically become disposable. When things are so easily available, we tend to take them for granted. Even more, we lose the art of fighting for and working at relationships. I recently polled my friends on Facebook to see what their biggest barriers for making new friends are. The biggest ones were finding time, especially when you have kids, feeling awkward, and even social anxiety. Firstly, I want to repeat that it's okay to get help. Social anxiety, or any kind of anxiety, is a real thing, and there are people out there who are trained and care to help you through it. You are not made to be trapped alone. Please be so brave and ask for help. That will be your first step toward freedom. As for being awkward, I again will raise my hand with you. So will the rest of the world, because everyone has social situations in which they are awkward. For me, those one-on-one interactions are my weak, awkward area. I feel so much more pressure to carry on conversation, to be on, like being up close to a painting, you're more likely to see those imperfections than if you're standing back and in a crowd. But you know the thing about awkward? It gets better with practice. Everyone starts out at least a little bit awkward in pretty much everything, but just like handwriting or running or ice skating when your legs are far apart, your arms are flailing, there's lots of falling on your butt, and you don't know how or when to stop. Is this describing anyone else's social situations, or am I alone in that? All of those things get better with practice, with discipline. And the level of proficiency you have will be determined by the amount of work you put into it. I'm not saying it's easy. Just like ice skating, you will likely get some bumps and bruises on the way. It may take courage to get back out there again, but take it easy. Take it slow. It's so worth it if you try. Actually, as I was writing this, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 was playing in the background. There are so many awkward examples in this movie alone, but one character who fits most is called Mantis. Her backstory is that she grew up alone on a planet and therefore does not understand the nuance of social interaction. But she tries things out, often to humorous results, and makes friends with other people who prove to also be socially awkward. If you're listening to this, then you likely did not grow up on a planet all by yourself, and therefore you probably aren't as awkward to the extreme of Mantis, but you don't ever have to be perfect. You just have to try. Speaking of perfect, I want to take a tangent here. One thing that was not mentioned, but I think is a huge barrier for everyone, is expectations. Maybe you're a dreamer and have ideas how you want interactions to go, but typically speaking, humans are insanely hard to predict. Does it completely throw you when a response or interaction doesn't go the way you'd hoped? I get especially bent out of shape when I plan something special and people, aka my tiny humans, don't cooperate or don't like it the way I had hoped. Or because I'm a huge planner, if events or responses don't go in a direction that I made a plan for, it completely throws me for a loop as my brain tries to figure out what to do next. Expectations are okay to have, but we need to be realistic with them. We can't expect that parenting is going to be smooth, or that your spouse will read your mind and realize how annoying something is to you, that your friend will like all of the same things you do, or that you'll never make a mistake. These expectations are unfair to yourself as well as those people who love you. Other times, expectations are valid. You want your children to call you something other than smelly butt face. You want your spouse to put their cell phone down at mealtimes. Or you would like to have some sort of interaction with your friends at least once a week. These need to be communicated. It is perfectly acceptable to have expectations and dreams for what you want relationships to look like, again, within reason. But it's not fair to think that they are obvious, universal, or the other person should just be able to figure it out. If it's so important to you, find a good, non-heated environment and discuss it. You'll probably find that they are both completely surprised and completely willing to work on it with you. The last barrier from my poll is a doozy: finding the time. As a mother of 3 kids under 6, now a pastor's wife, a part-time nurse, a fitness instructor, and a podcaster, I know how hard it is to find time. Sometimes you just have to be creative. One thing I've done is a cook, clean, playdate. I am the first to admit that cleaning is not my spiritual gift, you can ask my husband, but cooking, on the other hand, is one of my love languages. I found a friend who, like me, really wanted to have a mom friend and loves to clean. It was a perfect match. She came to my house, she helped me clean while I cooked dinner for her to take home. Our kids played together in another room and got into minimal amounts of trouble. We all got exactly what we needed: quality time. We just had to be vulnerable and be willing to help each other in weaker areas while not feeling judged about our own. Also, finding ways to have meaningful communication and ability to just check in on each other. I recently learned about a couple of apps called Voxer and Marco Polo. You can see my show notes for links to more information on those. In these apps, you can send a voice or a video message that can be seen when it's convenient. So this has been great for me personally because texting is hard when juggling a ton of things. And small children can smell from the other side of the house if you're on the phone, and therefore they must talk to you right now. These apps let me talk and listen when I have a moment and I don't get frazzled feeling like I need to listen right this moment. Sometimes, though, when it comes to making time for people, you just have to sacrifice. Are you way overcommitted and you don't feel like you get to be present with your family? Then stop and consider if there's something you can take off your plate, even just for a season, to spend time with those people closest to you. And again, you can see my show notes on an episode that I just did about rest. Are you willing to sacrifice an hour of sleep once or twice a month so you can have a coffee date and start your day with some much-needed quality time with a friend or group? Did you really want to get that one thing done while your kid was at preschool, but you know someone just needs to talk instead? Having relationships means we need to be less selfish, and not that sleep, extracurriculars, or chores are selfish, but sometimes we need to be willing to give up a little bit to really get those deep, meaningful relationships, which gets me to my next point. In C.S. Lewis's book, The Four Loves, he goes into deep definition of the word agape, which he describes as unconditional God love, selfless. He compares it to charity, and he calls it the best kind of love because it is the kind God has for us, and it's good in all circumstances. It's a love that acts. We as Christians need to get into every relationship being willing to give others mercy and to come to them on their terms and not our own. John 15:12-13 says, "This is my commandment. Love each other in the same way I have loved you. There is no greater love than to lay down one's life for one's friends." The original Greek word here for lay down is tithemi, and it's translated in two different ways. The first way is how I had always interpreted this verse, that Jesus was foreshadowing his sacrifice on the cross with a literal death for his friends. And it's true. We have never seen a greater love than Jesus laying his life down for all of us. However, there is another way to interpret this word, and both are right at the same time. The word means to set down or lay aside. And John used that same word in John 13:4 when he describes Jesus taking off his outer garment and laying it aside when he was going to wash the disciples' feet at the Last Supper. When we love the people that we have relationships with, which God commands Christians to do, then we are to take ourselves, our desires, and place them to the side to care for and love those friends that God has put in our life. I know that's scary, and it's hard, and sometimes it doesn't seem fair. But when this is done well by you and your friends, your spouse, your children, then all of you are sacrificing for each other. And I feel that it's actually embedded into our DNA that this is the way God created us, and it's not necessarily us Christians, but the way that we see relationships to be. I see that, and we're going to talk about this more in a couple more episodes later, but that when we create things, we show how God has created us. So again, looking at movies, I have watched Frozen at least, I think, 15 times in the past 7 days, like twice a day, if not more. And we're going to have some spoilers here. But at the end of the movie, Olaf the snowman is talking with Anna, who is confused about what true love is. She thought she loved someone, and it turns out he didn't love her, and she thought it was true love, and now she's confused. What is love? And Olaf tells her, "Love is putting someone else's needs before yours." And he follows that with the very famous line, "Some people are worth melting for." It speaks to how God created us. These people who made this movie, I don't know if they're Christians or not, but they see that that is what love is. It's how God designed us to see love, and it comes out in our creation. And again, we'll talk about that later, but that just fit so well. Your needs are still met when you are sacrificing for others and they are sacrificing for you. God takes care of you through your friends, just as he uses you to care for them. And this brings me to a hard point, something our favorite marriage ministry, Reengage, calls staying in your circle. And you can see my show notes again for more information on Reengage. I'm giving you guys a lot of good resources for this. Especially in marriage, it's easy to want to fix the other person. It's really easy to see fault in the way that your spouse treats you, neglects you, or drives you crazy in some way. But in all reality, you don't have the power to change people's hearts. Only God can do that. You can convince or force people to change their actions through arguments or discipline, but you do not have the capability to change how they feel about it. You do, however, have the ability to change your own. A change in a relationship starts with you working on you, not you working on them. And this is true for marriage, with your parents, with your children, with your friends. When I went through Re-Engage curriculum the first time, I noticed a huge change in my marriage communication, communicating to understand Josh, not for me to be understood. And this skill carried on to all of my other relationships, and I noticed a lot less conflict and a lot more meaningful reconciliation. I didn't change anyone, but when I worked on my own relationship skills is when I truly saw transformation in my relationships with others. And a lot of times, these results encourage them to want to focus introspectively as well. When two people do this for each other, the results are astronomically positive. I've seen near-ruined marriage revived, estranged parents reunited with their children, forgiveness from long feuds between friends, all because one person was willing to fight for their relationship from the inside out. Lastly, like the theme of the year, your identity is not based on your relationships. You are not more valuable because you have a significant other. You are not defined by how much your coworkers like you. If social situations make you feel completely uncomfortable, it does not mean you're an epic failure. Whether you have 10,000, 1,220, 50, or 5 Facebook friends, you are still important. If you're in the middle of a difficult relationship situation, it doesn't mean you cannot have joy. If you are so, so lonely, you are not destined to live in that prison forever. Satan desperately wants to steal our hope when it comes to relationships. But our true identity, value, and importance don't lie in any other person. They are in the hand of God, the one who created you in his image to be relational. Ephesians 4, 1 through 4. Therefore, I, a prisoner for serving the Lord, beg you to lead a life worthy of your calling. For you have been called by God. Always be humble and gentle. Be patient with each other, making allowance for each other's faults because of your love. Make every effort to keep yourselves united with the Spirit, binding yourselves together with peace. For there is one body and one Spirit, just as you have been called to one glorious hope for the future.
This has been episode 22 of the Bridge of the Faithful podcast, entitled The Fight for Relationships. For show notes, go to botfpodcast.com/episode/22. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/botfpodcast.